Welcome to episode 31. I'm Stuart McCullough, I'm the CEO of VHAA. Starting with this week's industrial roundup, and in particular with community health, as we continue to progress through a year of intense bargaining. This week we met with the Health Services Union No. 4 branch. That's the branch that covers psychologists, pharmacists and dietitians. We have regular bargaining meetings scheduled with that branch. We also have regular bargaining meetings scheduled with the Health Workers Union, which covers health and allied, as well as managers and administrative workers. This week, though, we were at the Fair Work Commission with VAPA, who is the union that covers allied health professionals. Members might recall that with respect to community health, VAPA are asserting that they wish to bargain individually rather than as a group. There is information with regards to those proceedings and the outcome contained under the community health section of the VHAA community app. With respect to health services, we have a meeting of the Nurses and Midwives Reference Group. This follows a recent meeting of the SDPPWG. We also presented this week at the Rural and Regional CEO Forum at the department, where we drew attention to the major work being undertaken by VHAA and our HR manager members during the course of this year. With respect to doctors' EBA bargaining, we still have meetings twice per week. Those are full-day meetings, as well as a meeting of our reference group, which convened earlier this week to provide feedback on the progress that we've made so far. We've also got an invitation to present at the Payroll and Finance meeting for Metropolitan Rural and Regional Health Services on the topic of understanding industrial relations. Just a reminder to our rural and regional members that our regional forums, our twice-yearly regional forums, are due again. Those occur in March and September. This September we are going to be in Ararat on the 5th of September, Mansfield on the 7th of September, Wonthaggi on the 11th of September, Colac on the 14th of September, and in Swan Hill on the 26th of September. And we very much look forward to catching up with our rural and regional members at those forums. Thank you to all those rural and regional members who provided feedback with respect to the agenda. As always, all our activities and meetings are summarised and available to members through the VHA community app, and we welcome your feedback through the community app. That's it for this week's Industrial Roundup. Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in depth with a particular subject. Joining me for this week's discussion is workplace relations consultant Rem Richards. Welcome, Rem.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So fresh from your critically acclaimed performance with regards to the Commission agreement approval process, you know the drill by now. Would you be kind enough to reveal the clue to this week's discussion subject?
Sure. Well,
if you'd be kind enough to demonstrate that for the camera, and then describe that for those people who are listening rather than watching this podcast.
So, it's a record of the Bert and Patty family album, which can only mean that this is to do with carer's leave.
That's exactly right, Rem. And congratulations, you're the first person to sit in that seat to correctly guess the subject.
Thank you.
We are indeed talking about carer's leave. And in terms of carer's leave, I think it's fair to say there's been something of an evolution. I mean, once upon a time, there was sick leave. And then for a period of time, you could access a limited number of days of your personal sick leave for carer's leave. And now we have, now that distinction has been removed. And we have personal carer's leave, which is a pool of leave that can be utilised for more than one purpose. And people are accustomed to the idea that that leave can be used for a personal illness or injury. But today we're going to really focus on its second purpose, which is the use of personal carer's leave really to discharge a caring responsibility under certain defined circumstances.
Yep. So when can you use personal leave to care for someone else?
So we'll talk about it in the context of the Fair Work Act, bearing in mind that our agreements are to the same effect. So what the Act talks about is that you can use that accrual of leave to provide care or support to a member of the employee's immediate family or household who requires care or support because of either a personal illness or injury affecting that household or immediate family member, or because of an unexpected emergency.
Yep. Okay, so who is a member of the employee's immediate family?
So that's a term that's defined by the Fair Work Act. You might recall from an earlier podcast, we talked about the fact that the Fair Work Act has a section that includes a whole bunch of terms. Section 12 has a dictionary, and the term immediate family is one of the terms that's defined in that dictionary. For an HR practitioner, when you are trying to turn your mind to any item that's covered by the NES, it's always worth double-checking against the Act, just in case, for some reason, the terms of the enterprise agreement don't properly reflect the broader scope, potentially, of a term that's under the Act.
So if an agreement defined the term immediate family in a more restrictive way, the Act would prevail?
That's correct. So if the enterprise agreement had a definition that was smaller, the bigger definition under the Act applies. If somebody would have an entitlement under the Act, but wouldn't under the agreement, they still have the entitlement under the Act. You cannot contract out of the National Employment Standards. They are the legislative minimum. That said, we did do a lot of work in this round of bargaining to go through the agreements and check the definition of immediate family. Yep. Interestingly, in some instances, those definitions were not up to scratch and had to be amended to ensure that they complied with the Fair Work Act.
Yep. Okay, so how is immediate family defined?
So it's defined at two levels. First of all, it's defined in terms of the relationships between the employee and their immediate family. So in that context, it's the employee's spouse or de facto partner, child, parent, grandchild, or their sibling.
Yep. Okay, so does it include a same-sex partner?
It absolutely does. In the explanatory memorandum for the Fair Work Act, back before it was an act, when it was a bill, it makes it clear that the intention with the use of the terminology is to remove discrimination. So there is no doubt that entitlement applies to same-sex couples. Our agreements are quite clear on that, just to ensure that there isn't any confusion, but also under the Act, that is the case.
Okay. So what about the term spouse?
So I think one thing that people may not have in the front of their mind is how broad the term spouse is. The Fair Work Act has a definition, again, at Section 12, that defines spouse to include a former spouse. So you're talking about utilising an accrual of personal leave in order to provide care or support to somebody who may be a former spouse.
Okay. So what about the term child?
So just to mix things up, the term child, again, defined under the Fair Work Act, but not this time defined under Section 12, but under Section 17.
Okay.
But relevantly, it's defined, the Act defines it in quite an interesting way. It talks about or defines a child as being a person including, and then has a definition. And I think that term including is really interesting and quite deliberate, that it's not exhaustive. But the definition of a child includes someone who is a child of the person within the meaning of the Family Law Act, and an adopted child or stepchild of the person. Importantly, it doesn't matter if the child is an adult.
Okay.
So it's not of child age, but the fact that they are a child of someone.
So that would mean that you can take carer's leave for an adult child?
You can. I think the challenge when it comes to an adult child, and this is the bit where human nature creeps in and people may exercise a degree of judgment. If you are, say, a 45-year-old living and your mother takes carer's leave to look after you whilst you have a head cold, there's probably going to be some judgment. But by the same token, it is absolutely the case that a person can take carer's leave where someone does require care and support in the case of an adult child.
My mum would be happy with that.
We'll make sure that she gets a link to this podcast.
Thank you, Stuart. So on that note, what about those related to a spouse or partner?
Yeah, look, that's really interesting. So the way in which a child is defined under Section 17 of the Fair Work Act really makes reference to the fact of the relationships that may exist. And the effect of that is that a child may not be somebody's biological child, but if they're the child, for instance, of the partner or spouse, then there could be an entitlement to take carer's leave to provide for that child.
Cool.
So, Stu, you said it was defined on two levels. What is the second level?
So, yeah, immediate family has really two branches, and that is in terms of relationships as they pertain to the employee, yep. But then it's about relationships that pertain to the employee's spouse or de facto partner. And in the case of the spouse or de facto partner, the kind of relationships that are recognised include child or our child, parent, grandparent, grandchild, or a sibling of the spouse or de facto partner of the employee.
Okay, so we've spoken about relationships, but what is the leave used for?
Yeah, so it goes back to those words of providing care or support when someone requires that care or support, either because that person, that member of the immediate family or household, has a personal illness or a personal injury that is affecting them.
Okay, so would the most common example be when someone's child is sick?
I think that's the example people will be most familiar with, where a child is sick and somebody needs to look after them. They require care and support. The child is experiencing a personal illness, and because of the circumstances, we gave that example before of the 45-year-old who, yes. Who has a cold. You know, the question there would be, do they require care or support? If you make that a 5-year-old, of course, then those things aren't in question.
Yep, okay. So is the term unexpected emergency defined?
No, it's not. So that's the second element, is that it talks about it's either because of personal illness or injury affecting the immediate family member or household member, or it's because of that unexpected emergency. And so the term unexpected emergency, it's not defined at Section 12, and in a sense, it would not be possible to define a term like that because it's not possible to anticipate all the circumstances that could be an unexpected emergency. That's what makes it unexpected.
So how do employers apply this entitlement?
So I would say that the majority of applications for carer's leave, for paid carer's leave, are straightforward. Yeah. And there will be those examples where it's somebody who has sick kids and has to provide care for them. I think what's really challenging for employers are those applications that are unusual or unexpected, that have a bit of novelty about them, those circumstances that sometimes, because of our human nature, invite a little bit of a value judgment. And I think the real test for employers is how to navigate through the unusual.
So does the Act go into much detail?
Not in terms of those examples as to where those lines are drawn. And I think that's what makes it so difficult. You've got a general principle, but exactly where the line is drawn is not explained. But in the explanatory memorandum, there is an illustrative example, which I think is quite informative and may sort of just remind people that the boundary may be a little different to where they thought it was.
Mm. So that's a good lead to the next question, would be what is the illustrative example?
So the illustrative example in the explanatory memorandum talks about two people, one of whom is named Brenda and her de facto partner Gladys. They're employed by companies in Wollongong, New South Wales. Brenda works full-time and Gladys is a casual employee.
Okay, so it's a same-sex couple.
That's right. And what we also learn from that example is not only where they work, Wollongong, but the mode of employment. So one is a permanent full-time employee, yep. And so the entitlements will be different for a permanent full-time employee as opposed to a casual employee. And really our discussion today has been about that permanent entitlement.
Yeah, okay. So what happens next?
In terms of the example, Brenda learns in April that her grandmother, Bonnie, who lives in Adelaide, has a terminal illness. The treating doctor advises that Bonnie faces a sharp deterioration in her psychological well-being without strong family support. Brenda and Gladys visit Bonnie on two occasions in June and November, missing 5 days of work on each occasion, and attend the funeral in early December.
Okay. So is there an entitlement to paid personal carer's leave?
So what the explanatory memorandum talks about is that Brenda, who's our full-time employee, is entitled to paid personal leave for both the June and November visits, both of which are for 5 days, both of which involve travel from Wollongong to Adelaide. And the purpose of that care, or the purpose of that leave, is to provide care or support to a member of her immediate family who requires that care or support because of an illness.
Yeah, okay. So what sort of evidence would Brenda need to provide?
So just in terms of evidence, this is a really tough one for employers because on the one hand, if you are insensitive in the way you ask for evidence, you possibly exacerbate what may well be the worst moment of somebody's life. So it's quite a challenge, but Brenda might be required to provide evidence that would satisfy a reasonable person, that she, as a member of the immediate family, was providing care and support to Bonnie, and that Bonnie required that care and support. And that might be evidenced in a statutory declaration or a letter from a family member confirming that the visits would provide that necessary support.
Okay. So is there an entitlement to unpaid carer's leave?
So Gladys, who in that example is a casual employee, might have access to unpaid carer's leave as Bonnie is a member of her immediate family that is related to because she's a member of the immediate family of her de facto partner. And whether or not she would be entitled, though, to the unpaid leave would turn on whether it was for the purpose of providing care or support to that family member. Every once in a while we get an example where it's hard to make that connection of whether or not they're actually providing care and support.
Yep.
And the most obvious example would be where they're heading to a particular location, but the person... the immediate family member is actually somewhere else, such as in care.
Yeah, okay. Yep. So what are some of the other examples?
So we don't have lots and lots of examples to work with, but there's a case, for instance, from 2014, which is called Johnston and the Trustee for MTGI, trading as Macquarie Technology. It's an unfair dismissal case, but it involves Justice Bolton identifying a circumstance as one where the employee was entitled to take carer's leave. The circumstance there involves an employee who had four children, three of whom were of preschool age. The employee's wife went into labour early. And then had complications that resulted in her staying at hospital for a longer than anticipated period. What it meant was that the employee needed to care for the children because the timing of things didn't go to plan. And that was something that Justice Bolton identified as being an unexpected emergency, that the children did require care and support. Under those, as a result of that emergency as such. What was interesting about that case is that the employee sort of kept the company up to date. The company didn't advise the person that they had not been granted the leave, and then upon their return said congratulations on the birth of your new child and here are some issues with regards to your employment. And ultimately that person was dismissed and I think the award, His Honour gave 20 weeks worth of compensation in those circumstances. But it's an example where it is a circumstance affecting the wife. It's not an illness, but it is an unexpected emergency.
Yeah.
Under those circumstances, and the children required to be cared for by someone. There's another really interesting case which involves called Klaus and Groot Island Mining Company, which involved a fly-in, fly-out worker. And that was a circumstance involving childcare. And what's interesting about that case is that the employee in question had childcare arrangements arranged. This is an employee who would be flying in for 7 days at a time, and then 7 days on, 7 days off.
Yep.
The childcare arrangements fell through. The person that she had arranged to look after her I think, son, pulled out at the last minute. And that was deemed in that decision to be an unexpected emergency, entitling that person to carer's leave. We do get queries about how carer's leave interacts with something like childcare. And certainly there is good support where there is an unexpected change to the plans.
Yep.
As opposed to a standing provision where school holidays come around and I'm going to take personal leave. I don't think it goes as far as that.
So what tips would you give to members?
Don't respond emotionally. Don't impose a value judgment at first instance because the circumstance is unusual. Yep. Take your time and consider the application properly and fully. And it may well be that the person has other kinds of leave available to them and you can sort that out, but I think it's about not rushing to judgment. I think it's about engaging with the person who has the particular circumstance. I think it's sometimes challenging for employers where the request is for long-term leave, in a way that we probably wouldn't question it if it was for long-term sick leave, where there's a bona fide illness that's beyond reproach. I think in the context it's also possible for a long-term carer's leave, although that can be a little confronting for employers in some circumstance, but engage with the employee. It may well be, for example, in some circumstances that a flexible work arrangement is of assistance to both parties to accommodate carer responsibilities in a particular environment. But don't rush to judgment would be my number one tip.
Okay, thank you, Stu.
All right, well, thank you, Rem, and I think probably all that is left for us is to head upstairs to the VHAA turntable and to pop on Bert and Patty's family album.
Sounds great.
Thank you, Bert and Patty.
Thank you, Bert and Patty.